Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming, or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. Visit speakuptalkradio.com. I'm so eager to present today's guest to you because after spending a bit of time on his website, I like him. He is Dublin Galyon. Dublin was born in East Texas, grew up in San Diego, California until graduation from UCSD in biology. A short stab at an acting career led to a performing as a teacher of English as a second language, and then to teaching literature analysis at adult schools, mostly to eager immigrant students. After reading Natalie Goldberg's Writing Down the Bones, years of journal writing translated into what would become Bougainvillea Blues, earning an MA in English from CSULA for a much shorter version. He now lives in the sprawl of Los Angeles with his wife and an enormous pepper tree. Currently, he is at work on a memoir whose working title is Love Your Son, Confessions of a White Father. Now, I love the pepper tree, and I can't wait to learn more about this fascinating gentleman. So welcome to the show, Dublin.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I'm also looking forward to hearing about your enormous pepper tree. What's going on with that tree?
The reason I put it in is people usually talk about their kids or their dogs or something, you know, their wife and something else if it's a man. But I don't know if it was my wife's idea or not, but we're just trying to think of something else to put in there. And it is a very large pepper tree that's in our backyard. It's up a hill and requires a fair amount of investment every 3 or 4 years to have it trimmed back. But it's gorgeous.
All right. Well, it made an impact on me. How's that?
Well, that's good. In fact, I had a friend who's in marketing and told me that when I was doing a kind of press packet, I was going to places to see if they would give me a review in some of the local papers, that I should put a sprig of the pepper tree in it, and I did it.
I bet you got response, huh?
I got a few responses, yeah.
All right, we're going to get serious. Your book is titled Bougainvillea Blues, and I met my first bougainvillea when I bought a second home in Arizona, and the area was covered with these beautiful bright pink and deep maroon flowering plants. Far from making anyone feel blue, so why the title for your book?
Well, I think I'm not sure when I first came up with put the two words together. I just like the sound of it, first of all. Second of all, it's Bougainvillea Blues is about a lot about my family. It's maybe a third autobiographical. And we used to do photos in front of the bougainvillea in front of our house, not every Sunday, but frequently, coming back from church on Sundays. And my feeling about bougainvilleas is a very cheerful. You know, I like looking at them. They make me feel good. And that wasn't always the case in my family. We looked really good on the outside. Inside the house, it was a little different story.
Interesting.
So therefore the blues.
I knew there had to be a little bit of a backstory there. So why don't you we'll start with this. Give us a brief synopsis of Bougainvillea Blues so that we can take this a little bit further.
Yeah, sure. I'm going to just give you a little blurb that I have in the back of the book. And it's Bougainvillea Blues is a heartfelt coming-of-age story of Joey Norton, a 12-year-old boy. Sex, love, and voyeurism. Joey is trying to figure it all out. When his world collides with the gorgeous Gloria, the boy who likes to watch is forced to participate in his own life for the first time. A smothering mother, neighborhood boys with their own code of sexuality, and a father with a secret that will stun the family and force Joey to make his first grown-up decisions of his life, turn up the heat in a story of love and loss set in the breezy, warm air of 1960s San Diego.
Mm-hmm. And you get a lot from those words, just the breeze of 1960s in San Diego. You already have a feeling of what that's going to feel like. And when I read that synopsis, I thought, I have to read this book. So good job.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, definitely. Now, you say that your early journaling, I imagine that became some food for your book.
What happened was I read Writing Down the Bones by Natalie Goldberg. Mm-hmm. And soon after that, I read her Wild Mind. And both of them, Writing Down the Bones, the subtitle is Freeing the Writer Within, and for Wild Mind, the subtitle is Living the Writer's Life. And my wife and I were on vacation in Idyllwild, that's up in the mountains east of Los Angeles. And I had gone to a bookstore, and I've had experience in the past on vacation where I'll go to a bookstore and I'll find a book that for some reason not only grabs a hold of me for me to decide to buy it and read it, but it seems almost life-changing. The Philosopher's Stone by Colin Wilson did that on one vacation. And this Writing Down the Bones, there was a hammock in kind of a general area between the cabins, and I lay down in it with this book, and she had suggested some things to do to start writing, kind of like free writing, like journaling, I guess. And I'd done journaling before that, so I hadn't done something exactly like this. And I just started doing it on the end papers of the book. And that's basically how I got started writing. I'd read some other things that encouraged me, too. But I realized all I needed to do was to start doing it and to believe that that would take me somewhere. Mm-hmm. And that's what she convinced me of. So, you know, she would have exercises like, I look at. And right now I'm looking out the window at a Chinese elm that one of the many that lie in the street that we live on. And you would just start with, I'm looking at the Chinese elm, and then just whatever comes to mind. Mm-hmm. With a few rules, like you just keep writing, you don't rewrite, you don't cross anything out, you don't check the grammar, spelling. You're trying to get at what she calls kind of beginner's mind.
Right.
And that's helped me a lot. And I still do that. I've got notebooks and notebooks on a shelf here that filled from just all those days of doing that.
I have experienced the same thing as well, and I've also heard others say it too. Especially, it seems like when a person goes on vacation, now maybe it's because their mind is in a different place, or they're in a different state of mind, but they wander into a bookstore or the airport shop or whatever, and they pick something up, and it's the exact thing they need right at that moment. And it's almost, as you say, life-changing. That has happened to me on more than one occasion. I know exactly what you mean.
Well, I think after it happened the first time, I almost expected it. And it didn't happen on all vacations. but it did. And right now, I can't remember if there was a third, fourth, or fifth book. I just remember those two.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. So as you were kind of free writing, was it your past that was coming out? I mean, was there a little bit of Joey in you and you and Joey?
Only in the vague, most oblique sense, because what I initially wrote, I never thought, well, let me go back a little bit. I was a science and math major. I was a science major in college, biology, as you mentioned. I did very well in science and math. I was lousy in English. And I flunked the writing test to get into UCSD and had to take a summer course in writing. Some of the ideas from that course I still remember. But I never, in my wildest dreams, thought that I would ever end up writing. Writers were like high fits on the violin. They were just so far beyond what I could do.
Mm-hmm.
But I admired them, and I had gotten started reading a number of things in college. C.S. Lewis is what really got me going at one point, especially not his essays so much as the Chronicles of Narnia. And I don't know, I guess with Natalie Goldberg and Ray Bradbury and a few other people, Brenda Uhland and, you know, Julia Cameron, all these people that I'd read had talked about writing, I just thought, well, you know, I'll just try it. And I also, because I taught for so long, it's what made me want to teach, I don't know which came first, mm-hmm. but I just believe that if you practice something, you get good at it. I don't buy so much talent as the factor that determines what someone becomes. Now, someone could say, well, you have a talent for doing a lot of writing. Okay, maybe. I don't know. And I'm not saying I don't have talent, but I don't think any of us know what talent we have until we try something.
Right.
And spend some time at it. And I'm kind of a believer in the 10,000 hours, and, you know, anybody does something for 10,000 hours becomes an expert at it. So the short story started, and some of it was based on my family. I think one of my first one of my first stories was The Car, and it was written about a 49 Plymouth that my father bought for like $50 in the 60s. And I just made up this story about what happened because my parents were in conflict a lot, and I made up a story about them going together, and you know, it has a really nice ending, happy ending,
mm-hmm.
Unlike a lot of the stuff in my family. But so I started writing some short stories, and then mostly what got me into Bougainvillea Blues, and maybe this is, did come from the journaling, is dealing with my mother. My mother's a very, she's a big character. I mean, she kind of fills the room in many ways. She's needy. She's also entertaining. And my mother has, you know, hundreds and, I don't know, maybe thousands, but of friends. And originally, Bougainvillea Blues was about dealing with her. And if you decide to read Bougainvillea Blues, there's a scene about Joey going into the bathroom when his mother is sick. And originally, I had the book opening with that scene. But I spent 2008, helping to care for my mother along with my sister as she was dying. She died in July of that year.
Wow.
And I finally was able to come to grips with my relationship to my mom. Now, she's, you know, how old was I then? I don't know, in my 60s, I guess. And she's, you know, she's in her 90s. And I, you know, I made some progress before. I'd worked stuff in therapy, but once I had done that, then all of a sudden the book no longer was me dealing. It still is dealing with stuff with my mom, and you'll see that, you know. But it's more about Joey, and I made it. The reason I say often people ask me how much of it is autobiography, and I say, well, a third happened, and a third definitely happened. A third of it definitely did not happen, and a third of it I'm not sure whether it happened or
okay.
not, because it came from my imagination.
Right.
And I think that the story then became more about Joey basically finding love, which is not, unfortunately, I think that's what the story is more about. And unfortunately, I think I should have probably picked another title, even though I like Bougainvillea Blues a lot, or had a subtitle or something. So that's why I try to cover that, you know, in the descriptions of the book so people know, because it really is. I think the story really takes off once Joey and the family are on vacation. It's about chapter 9, and he meets Gloria. He had met Gloria the year before, but he has extended contact with Gloria, his cousin.
And you don't typically find today many books that deal with young boys and adolescents. It's usually a whole kind of a girl's genre, so it's a little unusual in that respect as well.
Yes, yes. In fact, I have a friend who's being published by Farrar Straus next year. I think her book is coming out, and she just reads an enormous number of YA books.
Mm-hmm.
And her comment to me was, in fact, her comment, actually it's in the customer review, she mentioned that. She says, yeah, there's plenty of stuff about girls dealing with puberty, but not that many about boys.
Yeah. So very, very important and relevant. And you say that it took you 20 years to complete this book. Why is that?
Well,
you are a slow writer, right?
Exactly, yes.
She's using a crayon, exactly. Folks.
Well, That could be one explanation. Actually, I think there's a couple reasons for it. One is that I think I lacked confidence, and so I wasn't sure that I, you know, deserved to finish it. I think there's some kind of psychological stuff going on. But I think the main reason is, and I don't know how true this, I haven't checked this out with a lot of writers I know or people have written a number of books, but I know some people will write a book and maybe they'll publish it, maybe not, but it doesn't sell. They'll write another book, you know, and then finally by the third, fourth, or fifth book, they've really learned how to write well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the one that takes off. One of my favorite stories from John Steinbeck is that he had already had an enormous amount of fame from Of Mice and Men in the late 30s. Mid-late 30s, and he had written a book called Lafair Lettuceburg about farm workers in Salinas, California. Had it finished, was going to send it off, and decided it just didn't meet his standards. And he knew that if he'd sent it to the publisher, the publisher probably would have published it and it would have sold, again, because of his reputation for Of Mice and Men.
Right.
But he never published it, and I think he destroyed it. I'm not sure if I remember that part of the story correctly. But the next book, guess what it was? The Grapes of Wrath.
Wow.
Which his whole reputation, I mean, you know, East of Eden and other things
yes.
known for, but this is, you know, and he wrote it in 5 months, by the way.
Okay.
Okay, so now back to how long it took me. I think what I was doing was just, I didn't really know what I was doing. Mm-hmm. I was learning how to write a novel by writing this novel, and I kept doing it over and over again. So by the time 2007 came around, I was getting an MA in English, and I wasn't really intending to do it for an MA. I was going to write a thesis. And then someone said, well, you know, you can turn in a novel, right, or a fiction work. I said, really? Well, I've been working on this for a long time. So anyway, that's when I think you mentioned earlier, the 120-page or the shorter version of Bougainvillea Blues came out. So now it's four. So now it's, you know, three times that size. Almost four times that size. But I kept rewriting. And one of the things the people on my thesis committee said was, you know, the ending's pretty weak. And then I just realized I didn't have enough in there. I tried to write it from five different viewpoints. First person is a little beyond my skill, I think, although I still think it's a great idea. And then I settled on this double narrator that I have where it's Joey telling the story, but still with the older Joey looking over his shoulder so he can say things that a Joey couldn't know.
Right. I love to hear about people's journeys and how they came to actually complete their books. Always so interesting. Now, you self-published this yourself.
Yes.
So help our listeners, because there's a lot of folks that really have something to say, and, you know, going through the traditional route is often extremely difficult and heart-wrenching when you get some of the negative reviews back or the declines. So let's talk about you promoting your book. How did that go?
Yeah, I think the original decision for me to decide to self-publish, now the term sometimes used is to produce an indie book, I think partly it's because people used to associate self-publishing with vanity press, and it was like someone who was wealthy and just wanted to send, you know, books out and didn't reach any level of quality, which really is still true for self-publishing. But I didn't want someone to say no to me. I didn't want someone to keep me from publishing my book because they didn't like my book. And I'd had enough feedback from mostly from a friend who's now a retired professor of history, and a few other people who I respect, and a few other writers, that I just decided, you know, it was good enough. I'd worked through it enough. I didn't have the problems that a lot of self-published writers have, which is the editing is not complete. I went through CreateSpace, which is the self-publishing arm of Amazon. And there you can do it for like a minimal amount if you want to do everything yourself.
Right.
I decided to buy a few services. I don't remember what I spent, maybe, you know, a couple thousand, I don't know. It wasn't more than $3,000,
mm-hmm.
pretty cheap. And since it's on demand, I don't have to pay for a bunch of copies to be made ahead of time to sell. I ordered some for book signing. But,
right.
And what I bought from CreateSpace, I bought a minimal editing. I didn't want to pay, which may not have been as good an idea, but I didn't want to pay for someone to do the editing that's normally done at a traditional house where they're editing everything, character development, you know, plot, leave this in, you need more here, that kind of stuff. There's more someone saying, look, are there grammar errors? And this guy also would say if he thought there were some problems, like, oh, you know, you already mentioned that in the page before, did you remember?
Right.
So I had that done. I also had some ideas for a cover, and sent them those ideas and then bought like a minimal cover design package, and they sent me back the cover that you see now. Actually, that's what you see now is the second cover, because we made some changes about 6 months ago, put some color in it.
Okay.
Also, I wanted to put a testimonial on the front and on the back from a couple people, that writers who had read it and had some nice things to say. Mm-hmm. But they sent me back this with the boy looking through the fence, and I was blown away. I had someone who suggested that it was boring because it was brown, and it's a YA author, and hers are really kind of, well, they're kind of psychedelic almost, I mean, compared to mine. I just like the idea. In fact, I had a friend of mine who has a fourth grade class. I asked them what they thought was going on with the boy, and they said so many interesting things about it, like he's afraid, he's looking through the other side to see what's happening in the future, or, I mean, all kinds of wild stuff that I thought, yeah, this is a good cover.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that was their cover that they sent to me, and I liked a lot. And I didn't, you know, there's an enormous amount of money spent on covers by traditional publishers, and people can do it themselves. So to sum up, if you want to get your book out there and you have enough faith in it, maybe you've had a few people read it and you feel pretty good about it, you realize it needs a little bit of editing. All this stuff you can buy. I mean, the indie book publishing industry is enormous. There, everything that a traditional publisher does, I can do as long as I want to pay for it. Which, of course, if you have a traditional publisher, they're giving you money and they're paying to promote your book, and also they have the, you know, the publishing house behind them. But it's all doable. In fact, on my website, you can contact me. This is now for any of your listeners. I'm more than happy to talk to people through email about how to do this if they have questions about it. I feel like that's one of the things I have to give back, because mm-hmm. I got a lot of help from an enormous number of people along the way, especially a friend of mine who used to be a Disney advertising executive, and he's helped me enormously just saying, yeah, go do that, you know, try that out, see what mm-hmm. happens. So I now, and also one other thing, because it's in the ebook form, there are a number of websites that promote ebooks. You got to pay for it. Some are more expensive than the others. The ones that are more expensive, at least like BookBub and Book Daily Nation, are excellent sites because, well, I'll give you an example. One of the things I do is on Amazon, I can promote my book for 5 days. I can change the price to free or any kind of reduction I want in the price of the book. And this is through the Kindle. Kindle Select, I think is the program called. On that, every 3 months, I can reduce the price. And the last time, I've been reducing the price in the past. This last time, in March, I decided to try it for free, and that's for exposure. And I was, okay, let me see if I can get the category right. I have these little small categories on Amazon. Under fiction, family life, and they have it for the 100 best-selling free books, and the 100 best download free books and the 100 best-selling books. They list that on Amazon. On a Wednesday in March, my book hit number 2. Because this one site I used is just such a good site, and I've sold. Free books were downloaded, 1,500 were downloaded in 5 days, and 900 on 1 day.
Whoa.
One of the things that matters for self-published books, well, for any book, I suppose, but especially self-published books, indie books, is the number of customer reviews.
The reviews, yes.
And the reason that matters, and of course you have to have a certain standard, I'm like at 4.7 out of 5 stars or something like that, the average. But I now have 32 reviews. And there's places like BookBub, which is one of the primo places to advertise a Kindle, an e-book. You're just guaranteed to get a whole bunch of downloads and sales. They won't take you. I mean, a lot of their people have 800 mm-hmm. customer reviews, or 1,000, or it's a book that came out last week and it has already as many as I have.
Right.
And my book came out 2 years ago. Yeah. But they do take books that are, because I watch the site a lot, they do take books that, you know, were published a few years ago and don't have an enormous number, have a decent number. 32 is okay. Now that I know that, I know how to get my book out there, and it's one of those things that I want to be able to tell other people. I don't mind them not having to spend as much time as I did. I'm welcome to help them with shortcuts, which is what a woman who makes a living off of self-published books told me about.
Excellent. And why don't you give that website now, so in case folks are listening, they can write that down now.
Let me see if I... DublinGalleonWriter.com.
All right, DublinGalleonWriter.com.
That's right.
Those are excellent points, so thank you for going over that with me. And talking about promoting, I have to say that your videos are insanely awesome. They're short, they're honest, they're funny, and that's when I knew right at the moment that I really liked you. I like the ones with the mirror, and I especially liked your book trailer. I don't know who came up with that idea. It's super.
Yes, thank you very much. That's a friend of mine who's a videographer and who did the filming, directed, and it's his girlfriend that's the woman in there.
Yeah,
I really like it a lot, too. And as far as the... thank you for the feedback on the ones that I do at home. I was trying to come up with something just stupid and silly to promote, obviously, because that's promoting the price changes in the book that I do now and then. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad to know that you liked it.
It hit my sense of humor, so I don't know if that means much, okay. But I enjoyed it. So briefly, you mentioned to me prior to our conversation that you and a painter friend convene at an art salon once a quarter where writing, painting, photographs, drawings, film, and music, and even acting are presented for encouragement and friendly criticism of the artist. That actually sounds like an enjoyable and stimulating time. Tell us just briefly about that.
Sure. A friend of mine, I retired from teaching in 2012, and when I was still teaching, and he's retiring this June from teaching a fourth grade class, and we got to talking. We had met through a men's group. We got to talking about teaching, and got to be pretty good friends. We have pretty much the same attitude about teaching. And he also had done, ceramics in the past, and painting. And I would mention, some of my struggles with writing and, the usual thing of being afraid and not feeling I'm good enough and all those kinds of voices that come into my head that get in the way. And we would just end up encouraging one another. And one day we said, it'd be nice to kind of expand this conversation. We know a lot of guys who are artists, and you list the various, categories they're in. So we decided to start this salon. And the idea was that people would come there, present whatever they're working on, and they would get a response from the rest of us. Now, I've been in a number of writing groups. I'm in a writing group right now. And I need feedback from fellow writers, but it's also, I don't want just writers to read my books. I'd like for a lot of people to read, and I want to know what they think about it, people that are in other areas, and especially other artists, because they notice stuff. So that was part of my motivation for wanting to start it, but it turned out that we really have convened a group of people. We never have more than about 10 at any session. There's a group of maybe 40 or 50 on our list, and some say they want to come and haven't come, and some come once or twice. But when I'm looking at someone's watercolor, in fact, I ended up buying some from this close friend of mine, some ones he'd recently made. I'm looking at a drawing, and we have a drawing of a guy who's been drawing for, 8 months, 9 months, something like that, maybe a year, just decided later on he wanted to take a class and fell in love with it. So we've got beginners, we've got people making a living at it, some actors who are making, actually I'm not sure the actors are, but anyway. So we've got professionals, we've got advanced amateurs, and we've got beginning amateurs. And, it's like getting together with some close friends of yours, that you need encouragement and say, gosh, I just need encouragement today. Could you give me some encouragement?
Yeah.
And that's what it's like, So I come away from there, energized to want to write more.
I love that idea. It's kind of like a support group, and it's similar to what we're doing here on this interview, is sharing your journey with others and with other writers, current writers, want-to-be writers, and so that they could hear from other folks who maybe are going through some similar processes as you, and come away enthused and enlightened and hopefully can move forward. So yeah, I understand that and I appreciate it. So tell us, what is next for Dublin Galleon?
Well, Can I mention a couple other books real quick?
Sure.
Before we get to that, is that all right?
Yeah.
I just want to mention, this is a book written in 1938. I have no idea how I found it. It's called If You Want to Write, subtitle, A Book About Art, Independence, and the author is Brenda Yulin. And her first chapter is entitled, Everybody is Talented, Original, and Has Something Important to Say. Mm. Now, I believe that, and she had experience with working with people. I don't know why they came to her to learn to write or to practice writing, but it's, what does she say, prosperous and poor, stenographers, housewives, salesmen, cultivated people, servant girls, etc. So that's one. And I really recommend that book for if you're having trouble believing, you know, that you have something to say. The other book, it's not so much a book as a person, because she has this. And have you heard of Julia Cameron before in The Artist's Way?
I've heard of that, yes.
Okay, well, she's kind of like an industry now. She's written other books
right.
on that. But the main thing that I took from her, partly it's the writing exercise that she suggests you do daily pages every day, no matter what. But the other thing was, she talks a lot about things that get in the way of writing. And what often gets in the way, that I hear all the time, it's not an excuse for me anymore because I'm retired, but although sometimes it happens to me too, and that is I don't have enough time. Well, if I had more time, well, when I have time, I'm going to do it. You know, when I retire, I'm going to do it. And I don't buy that. My experience of what people I know who have retired, that having extra time does not guarantee anything. All it guarantees is extra time. The thing she said was basically that what writers need is not time, or not just writers because it's for artists. What artists need is not just time. What they need is encouragement. And I would add one other thing to that myself, and that is permission. Because one of the guys in the salon group, I had just met him. He came through another friend to the group, and he does watercolors. He has done 300 watercolors a year for the past 5 years.
Mm. Wow.
My response to him is, oh, my God, you are so disciplined. And he said, no, Dublin, I give myself permission.
Ah. All right.
So I think that to me is the issue. What happens with saying I don't have enough time is saying really it's not that important to me, or I can't allow myself to have the time to do that. And that's why, to me, what's most important is not time, it's the people to encourage you. I had an enormous number of people encouraging me all along the way.
These are rare words of advice. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Give yourself permission. All right, so what are you giving yourself permission to do next?
Oh, okay, thank you. Yes. Oh, very good. Good segue.
Good segue.
Okay. I'm writing now, which you mentioned earlier. It's a memoir. It started as a novel because that's what that's what I did before. Actually, it actually started as a memoir first, and then it went into a novel. And then I was reading it in writing groups, and they said, you know, Dublin, you really this shouldn't be fiction. This should be you telling your story. And so I had originally titled it Confessions of a White Father, because our adopted son is African-American. But I don't know, do you have a few minutes, or are we over?
No, go ahead.
Okay, so I when I first started writing it, I'm just going to read a little bit from it. I'm writing this because I feel I failed as a father. I don't mean in particular instances as a tutor or a disciplinarian or a caregiver, the ways every parent falls short at times. I mean how much I failed to have a love for him that was not dependent on what he gave me. Because I now know that I desperately wanted him to love me. I wanted respect too, but mostly I wanted affection. The type my friends revel in with their grandchildren, the type that I wanted from my own parents. And once I left home from every girlfriend, the type that says I love you and be devastated when you die. Now, this is a kid who cracked baby, taken away at birth. His birth mother already had two kids. She had two more. He's the only one that wasn't kept. Mm. That's probably the major wound that has caused him to do all the acting out he did with us.
Yeah.
Enough acting out that he had to go to a therapeutic boarding school in Texas. So we've been having some remodeling done. This was like about 6 months ago. And I came across a card. And it was a Father's Day card. And here's what it says. Dad, now I don't have a date on it, but I'm pretty sure it was written from this therapeutic boarding school in Texas. And he had so many problems, he stayed there twice for 20 months. So for 40 months, he was away from us. We visited him. We talked to him. But anyway, after reading this, having found this Father's Day card, then that's when I changed the title to what you mentioned earlier, Love Your Son, mm-hmm. The Confessions of a White Father. Dad, I hope that Father's Day goes well for you. I'm sorry that I cannot be there with you. Since Father's Day actually needs the son to be there, I'm including the syntax here. But that's not happening right now. What I can do is thank you for being there always, being my number one fan. And that's the main thing I need in life. So this day needs to be extra special for the hard work you've done for me. Love, your son.
Oh.
Now, in the closing, it's going to say love, comma, your son, right?
Mm-hmm.
He left out the comma.
Oh, my gosh.
Could he have left out the comma on purpose?
I don't know.
While the note acknowledges my support, was he subconsciously asking me to remember how much he needs my love? Anyway, that's from the introduction to Love Your Son, Confessions of a White Father. I've got about 100 pages. I only have experience publishing one book, and that was 460. So I don't know. I think this is going to be a little shorter, but and I kind of think maybe I'm halfway through. But what I'm doing is I'm interviewing people, and in fact, I interviewed his third grade teacher, and she showed me a photo album, and in every photo he's in, he either looks contented or happy. And I forgot that from all the stuff that we had of him running away and all the right. stuff that he did, hiding knives under his bed, my Lord.
Oh.
Anyway.
Dublin, that is beautiful, and I want to end with that because that is just so human and priceless, and it makes us want to have you finish that book so we could read it. You are a beautiful person. I knew when I looked at your website just within a few minutes, I said, I like him. And now that we finished speaking, I know that I was right on right at that moment.
Okay, good. Well, let me say, here's what I want to thank you for. What you encouraged me, forced me to do, was to be nervous enough that I wanted to prepare for this. And as I'm doing that, I'm reading parts of Bougainvillea Blues I haven't read in a long time. And I thought, damn, you know, this is not bad. You know, I still like my book. So that's one thing you did for me. The second thing is I got to look back and find all the books that I had read that were about writing, encouraging me to write. I didn't even mention Annie Dillard and Writing Life and a few others. So that's the second thing. The third thing is I started looking at the books that moved me, especially novels. So anyway, I determined I wasn't going to start worrying yesterday, which I did anyway, but I was going to wait till this morning to spend time on it so I didn't take too much time away from my other stuff. But that's what I was doing this morning. When I got up, I just started preparing for talking to you, and that was looking at all this stuff, and I'm thinking, God, I got to read that book again.
Well, I'm so glad that this helped you to revisit your past. Tell you what, since we didn't touch on everything today, as soon as you finish your book, Love Your Son, we'll do this again.
That sounds great.
If you have something to say or share and would like to be interviewed, we will feature you too on the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. Just visit the website speakuptalkradio.com or leave a message on our studio line 440-725-5462. Go ahead, speak up.